So what we're going to look at this week is the subject of tefillin. And what I want to look at is first question, does anybody know how many paragraphs are in the tefillin?
Four.
Good. And what are those four? So we know...
It's Shema, isn't it?
Shema, good. And Vahayayim Shema. So the first two paragraphs of Shema that we say daily, Shema... V'ahavta is one paragraph, and V'ayayim Shamoah is the second paragraph. Those are the ones that are very well known. We say them all the time. We repeat them all the time. So it's like, of course. But the other two paragraphs come from Exodus 13, okay? And that's what I want to focus on today. Here's a fun one, okay? The Jews come out of Egypt. God says, you got to wear tefillin. So for 40 years, while the Jews are in the desert, let's assume that they wore tefillin, okay? But there's something interesting about those tefillin. They only had two paragraphs inside of them. How come? Because the two paragraphs that we know so well, Shema V'Hayim Shema, were said in the 40th year. They were taught to the Jewish people in the 40th year. So for till that time, there were only two paragraphs that were given to us. And so our tefillin had only two paragraphs in them. That's perhaps the understanding that's what we had. But either way, point is there are four. And the other two that don't get as much press are important to look at. I want to look at them today together. And when we...
You know that they added the other two later.
Say what?
How do you know the other two were added later?
It said, well, the four... paragraphs each have in them a mention of the mitzvah of tefillin, which is so. Tefillin as they are, we know that how they are supposed to be black and square and leather and all this stuff. Most of it
from the oral law,
correct? It's coming halach. We call halacha Moshe Mitzrayim that tells us what they should look like. The square, this everything we have is coming from Hashem gave it over to Moshe, but orally, okay, verbally. There are certain things that potentially could be learned out from the text. For example, it has to come from the hide of a kosher animal. I'll show you in the wording here how it's hinted to that. Okay, but. So the idea of these four paragraphs are halacha l'moshe mitzrayim. You want to say something?
John.
Yeah.
So I know you know that when you look at the tefillin, usually on, I think it's the arm one or maybe the head one, you can actually see the four components.
Correct, because in the head one, there are four separate cloths or parchments. Okay.
Okay, and then what about the arm one?
One long one.
Of the same exact thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What? Now,
that's interesting.
Crazy.
Okay, wait. I want to tell you something else that's very interesting. And that is
that... Why would they be different?
What is it?
Well, they're the same. They're just stored differently.
Well, why would they be stored differently?
Oh, okay.
And why would they be stored with four?
That's the answer to that is it's not this week's class.
It's not what? Right.
It's not. We're not covering that this week. If we want to get back to that, here I'll give me a second here. I'll show you. I'm going to show you something. Let me see if I can pull this up here. Let me see if I have it here. If I have it,
half the time the off topic stuff is as interesting as the on topic stuff.
That's exactly how it goes. Let me see if I have. I want to show you something that's very cool. If it's here, no, it's not here. Let me see if I can pull it up. I have pictures of parchments that I could show you. That I don't know if it's sitting here or if I put it into. I think I might have moved it to a different email. One second. Let's see. Okay. So while we're talking, while I try to pull up that, so the two paragraphs that don't get enough press, so to speak. They're like almost like the stepchildren in a way. Are these other two that were
unloved stepchildren?
What is it?
The unloved stepchildren.
Exactly. Well, you know, but they just, because we don't say them daily, or people, maybe some people do, but there are people that have the custom to say those two chapters. After you put on your tefillin, there are people that will say these two paragraphs as well, which, you know, it's a great way of connecting to this, yep. I think I have a picture here. Let's see if it comes up. Oh, sheesh. Oh, there it is. Okay. Awesome. Here, let me show you. So this is just to give us a visualization of this is one paragraph. This is Shema. So this is the Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad V'Ahavta. All right. So you see that's the first paragraph. That now again, there's a whole discussion as to what the order is, right? Because here, look at that. That is the one that I want to look at now together. It says like this. It says, "Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe leimor, kadesh li kol b'chor peteh kol rechem b'bnei Yisrael adam v'behem alihu." And then it goes on. So we're going to analyze this parsha here. Then there is, that's v'hayayim shema. And then this is, as it comes up, this is v'hayaki v'yachal. That's the other paragraph we're going to look at today. That's another example of the one that's not getting enough love. And then this, if you look at this, what do you see here? This is the one that goes in the yad, in the hand, arm one. Because notice how it continues on here. It's all part of the same parchment. That's not, now we're going back to the other one. Okay, so that here's a separate parchment. This is part of, you can see to the right and to the left that there's writing.
Oh, you can see to the right and the left that it's...
That's part of the same, which probably is the most interesting for us to look at because of the order, and we'll talk about that very quickly. And then we have, again, separate parchment. So you get the sense of how long it is. It's folded up into a little thing and put in the side. Okay, fine. That was our getting to see
And the ayin and the dalet are
big. Which
is large.
And what do they spell? It spells aid, which means to be a witness.
Means witness.
Right. Good. Okay. So now let's come back here.
Ooh, I'm impressed, Hugh.
Yeah, Hugh. You ever don't sleep on Hugh. Right. Okay. Fine. So now, so here we have to look at this. I want to show you something that's just odd, but it's first on the surface it's very strange. We're going to go deeper into it. But let's read the first paragraph. This is the first paragraph that's given to us. It's the beginning of chapter 13 in Exodus. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, "Sanctify to me every firstborn, everyone that opens the womb among the children of Israel, among man and among animals. It is mine." So the firstborn of both of man and animal that belongs to us is God's. Moses said to the people, "Remember this day when you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for with a mighty hand the Lord took you out of here, and therefore no leaven shall be eaten. Today you are going out in the month of spring, and it will come to pass that the Lord will bring you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivatites, and the Jebusites, which he swore to your forefathers to give you a land flowing with milk and honey, and you shall perform this service in this month," meaning that the holiday of Passover has to be in the month of the in that month, okay, which is ends up the 15th of Nisan, which we always make sure to be in the spring. "For 7 days you shall eat unleavened cakes, and on the seventh day there is a festival for the Lord. Unleavened cakes shall be eaten during the 7 days, and no leaven shall be seen of yours in your possession, and no leavening shall be seen of yours throughout all of your borders. And you shall tell your son on that day, saying, 'Because of this, the Lord did this for me when I went out of Egypt.'" Okay? "And it shall be to you as a sign upon your hand and as a remembrance between your eyes." That's talking about tefillin. "In order that the law of the Lord shall be in your mouth. For with a mighty hand, the Lord took you out of Egypt. And you shall keep this statute as it is at its appointed time from year to year." That's paragraph number one, verses 1 through 10, okay? By the way, just as a side, I told you that the idea of has to be kosher from a kosher animal is that it should be in your mouth, something that you can put in your mouth, i.e. kosher, so that this is like a side, like little thing, hint, you have to have a kosher animal's hides to make up the tefillin, right? Because tefillin's made out of made out of the hides of an animal. Not just the straps, the actual boxes are made out of hides of an animal. You wouldn't think that when you're touching it because it's so been worked over and formed and made into that, what you're seeing, but that's what it's coming from. Okay, so now, I ask you this question. What is the problem with our first paragraph of the tefillin?
Which paragraph?
Okay, this what we just read together. So let me read it again. Sanctify to me every firstborn, every one of that opens the womb among the children of Israel, among man and among animals, it's mine. Moses said to the people, remember this day when you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. For with a mighty hand, the Lord took you out of here, and therefore no leaven shall be eaten. Today you are going
out. Wait, that's the first paragraph of the tefillah?
Yes.
I thought it was Shema Yisrael, I don't know Elohim.
No, the first one that God gave us is this paragraph in the Torah. In Exodus 13, he gives us this paragraph. He gives us the other one that we're going to read, and it starts at verse 11.
That's and those are the ones chosen to be in the tefillin, not Shema Yisrael?
No, Shema's also. Shema's also in there. There are four paragraphs.
It's just not first.
Oh, why is not first then?
Because it wasn't recorded in the Torah. The first thing to be recorded in the Torah that has to do with tefillin is right here. Chapter 13. Okay.
Got it.
So when you're asking what's wrong with it, what do you mean? In what context?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for getting us back. Thematically.
Oh, yeah, blame me. Oh, don't blame me.
Of course I'm going to blame you. It's of course, yeah. You know. But either way, it's okay. It's all good. So practically speaking.
Because I have a bunch of questions about this.
Good. Paragraph. Start. Ask me.
Right. First is kind of like a little bit of an offshoot, but I find it interesting. You know, we all say that we eat unleavened bread because we were in a rush out of Israel and this and that and everything else. Doesn't say anything about that. It just says you don't eat.
Good.
The next thing is in here, there's towards the end, it says it twice, right? Like you can't eat leavening and then you says you can't eat. It's weird that it says it twice, right?
Okay.
Unleavened cakes of eating, no leaven shall be seen in your possession, and no leavening may be seen throughout all your borders.
Good, okay. Good question.
So it kind of mentions that twice.
Good.
Those are the questions I've always had.
Okay, good. These are good questions. We'll talk about it. But just tell me, like, I'm reading a paragraph here, okay? And it starts out, and its title sentence is, sanctify to me every firstborn. Okay?
Yeah, what the hell?
And then so tell me about that. Let me hear about it. Give me something, all right? And Moses says to the people, remember we came out of Egypt and don't eat chametz. You're coming out month of spring. And when I bring you to the land of Israel, basically, the land of milk and honey, you're going to do this service during this month, 7 days, eat matzah. On the seventh day, it should be a holiday. Eat matzah, 7 days, don't see chametz, don't have any type of leaven. And tell your child on that day, because of this, God took me out of Egypt. You'll have this as a sign in your arm, as a remembrance between your eyes, filling out the head. The Torah shall be in your mouth, because God took you out of Egypt. And keep this statute as appointed time from year to year. Where is the story about this idea of the firstborn that it should be dedicated to God? Zero! So we start out with this thing, and then it, like, where'd you go?
Question? What are you finding to be suspicious?
It tells us, it starts out, title sentence, sanctify to me every firstborn, every one that opens the womb. That's the mitzvah of Bechor. The idea that you take your firstborn and dedicate it to God, whether it's your child, your human child, or the child that's coming in your flock, your animal.
All right.
Firstborn's got to be dedicated. Okay. Can I have a little more on that? No. It goes into this whole thing about coming out of Egypt. Remember Egypt. Remember coming out. Remember, you know, talk about the holiday of Passover. No leaven. Eat matzah. What does that have to do with that? It just goes off on a tangent and then tells us about tefillin. And then it's like going between coming out of Egypt, remembering Egypt, holiday of Pesach, and tefillin, and nothing to do with the story it just started with. It left me hanging.
Well, did it need it? I mean, they just left Egypt, right?
Okay.
They went through this.
Okay.
So maybe there's an understanding there. I mean, everybody that's hearing this or reading this at that time just went through this, right?
Okay, so let's look at paragraph 2. Okay? Paragraph 2 starts at 11. And it will come to pass when the Lord will bring you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your forefathers, and he has given it to you, that you shall give over to the Lord whatever opens the womb, and every miscarriage that opens the womb of an animal, which will be yours, the males belong to the Lord. And every firstborn donkey you shall redeem with the lamb, and if you do not redeem it, you shall decapitate it, and every firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem. So that's already three verses that are giving us a lot more to deal with, to work with, on this subject matter. Okay, it's not like over the top, but it's like giving me more about the idea of, also, if you go, let's just contrast it. One talks about, sanctify to me every firstborn, okay, nothing about redeeming. Notice that? Sanctify to me every firstborn, every one that opens the womb among the children of Israel, among man and among animals, and is mine, and then off to the races about coming out of Egypt.
And this is what it says in the tefillin right now.
Yes. Okay, then paragraph two gives us a little bit more now. Because in paragraph two, it says, when you get to the land of Israel, that God promised you and your forefathers and gave to you, you shall give over to the Lord whatever opens the womb and everything that comes out of the womb of an animal, the first that comes out of the animal, also belong to the Lord. And every firstborn donkey, but then you can redeem them. Tifdebeseh. But if you don't redeem that donkey, then you decapitate it, and all the firstborn of man, of your children, you redeem. So that's already a shift. Meaning, it didn't tell us any. Now that you see this, so now it's giving us more. Like when we talk about pidyon haben, right? You've heard that, the idea of someone has a firstborn, naturally born, no C-section. Right, so a vaginally born, firstborn male of a non-Kohen, non-Levite, either from the woman's side or the men's side, so like a pure Yisrael, pure Israelite, is born from a firstborn, you have to redeem that child. 30 days after the child is born, you have to do a pidyon haben. Okay? Because what God says is that first child belongs to God. It's Lihu, it's mine. But you can redeem it. So that whole process, this whole mitzvah of Bechor, of Pinyon Ben, of Pinyon of Bechor, there's two things. By the animal, you bring it as you give it to the Kohen, and that's a whole other thing. And then you also have of the person, of a people child that's born, that qualifies for the different parameters that you need to do. You then are poda, you redeem that child. So that's the mitzvah of Bechor. So in the second paragraph, it gives us something to work with. In the first one, it just tells us about it and it leaves us hanging. Okay? So the question is, what's going on there? Okay? You hear the question?
No.
You don't hear the question?
No, I mean, I can hear the question, but like...
It doesn't bother you.
I'm still sort of confused as to why this is in that tefillin box.
Oh, so I'll show you why, on the most basic level.
Like why that?
Okay,
why
look. I'm going to show you. It's not. It's nothing. There's no like. This is just very simple stuff on the most basic level, And it came to pass when Pharaoh was too stubborn to let us out, the Lord slew every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of the man and the firstborn of the beast. Therefore I slaughter for I sacrifice all males that open the womb, and every firstborn of my sons I will redeem. So God says, okay, so what do you have here? Okay, when you're here. Oh, I missed a sentence here. It's important. And it'll come to pass, if your son asks you in the future, saying, what is this? You shall say to him, with a mighty hand did the Lord take us out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And it came to pass, when Pharaoh was too stubborn to let us out, the Lord slew every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of the man and the firstborn of the beast. Therefore, I slaughter for a sacrifice all males that open the womb, and every firstborn of my sons I will redeem. So what that's saying is like this. Because God killed the firstborn of the Egyptians, now all the firstborn of yours, both animal and male, a man, so the ones that are of animal you'll bring as a sacrifice, and those are firstborn of the sons, I will redeem. Okay? Again, tying it back, he's starting to see that the idea is that there's just being tied, this whole idea of firstborn, you know, redemption, it's tied back to the way that the whole thing played out at the end, that God smote the firstborn of the Egyptians, and therefore he, okay, fine. Therefore you have this mitzvah, okay? Now you ask the question, why does this have to, what does it have to do with tefillin? And it shall be for a sign upon your hand and for ornaments between your eyes, for with a mighty hand did the Lord take us out of Egypt. So in this paragraph, and in the paragraph that preceded it, it spells out. Now, you might ask the question, why does the Torah, why does God dictate this thing? And here he's talking about a couple of things. He's talking about the idea of the firstborn male, then tells us about the coming out of Egypt, of celebrating the holiday of Pesach, matzah, don't have chametz, all that stuff. And in there, he tells us about tefillin. So the tzivoy, the commandment for tefillin, is being brought up in both of these paragraphs. Hence,
okay, I get it. Okay,
okay, so
it.
That's right. It's like a very, and just for our purposes, also in the Shema, think about the Shema that you say, right? I'm looking for a sitter here. We'll see in there as well, the same thing, that it makes note of this commandment to have tefillin. So it's kind of a funny thing. It's like kind of like, you know, the picture of the guy on the cereal box, and he's sitting there eating his cereal with a box of that cereal on the table, and on that cereal box is a picture of a man sitting there with the cereal box, with a picture of a man sitting. You ever see that one? Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I can imagine. Yeah.
Okay, but you understand, like, it's like. But like here you have like the idea, it's the tefillin is the paragraphs we put in to the tefillin are the ones that talk about tefillin, basically.
Correct. Okay, got it.
Okay, but maybe the analogy's not so great. I just like that analogy. I just like that.
So the question is then.
But the idea is that, so then the next step that we need to take is, okay, I get it. On the most basic level, I have four paragraphs that all speak about the commandment to put on tefillin on your arm and on your head. Okay? But in those tefillin has verses that are very important to us. And in a sense, one of the things that we should do, yeah, God says on the most basic level, put those on a daily basis. Besides for Shabbos, put on your tefillin every day. Put it on your arm, put it on your head. But when you're wearing this tefillin, you've not just, you've fulfilled an obligation. God said to do it, great. But, and then we say the Shema, we recite the Shema. And so what we're doing when we're reciting the Shema is we're focusing on the oneness of God. We're taking upon ourselves the idea of God gave us all these commandments. And so in the process, we're accepting upon ourselves that responsibility. But So there's an idea that's part of this process. Then is we're within our putting on tefillin, we're trying to connect to the messages that are in these boxes. And so
I get it. I think the larger question is, okay, but why is it that the part about putting on tefillin is connected to the idea of Egypt and firstborn?
Why are they
connected?
Awesome. That's what I was waiting. I was trying to get you there and you got there. Awesome. We accomplished. That's the end of the class for today. We've accomplished our mission. Okay, so now perfect. Good. Now one of the things that's amazing about this one is that more than the Shema and the Hayam Shema, those two paragraphs, which are we read all the time, here we have a fundamental idea that you just asked, like what's we're supposed to be connecting to the coming out of Egypt. So in our putting on tefillin, we are connecting to the Yetziah, the Exodus, and then within that process, we see that in these paragraphs, it's tying us to something bigger, the idea of the firstborn. This whole everything is there's a lot going on here. So now, it brings us back to what I started with, and we still have to like what Larry you brought Lawrence you Larry Lawrence you brought up a question of the redundancy in that verse of why does it lay it out for us in this way of repeating
and not just once. I mean it's over and over.
Okay, so that I might have to come back to that because I was going in a different direction. There's a lot that's like in the Gemara talks about that. It actually breaks it down. There's a lot there. There might be a separate class, but to answer your question, it's conveying multiple ideas so that we would like if I were to take this out, right? So just to show you, just to like a visual. So I would go to here. I go to Safaria. And I go in, I open up Exodus 13, okay? And I go to that verse. Where is it here? Here, okay? And I click on this thing, and there are 25 Talmudic passages that talk about that verse. You see that? 25. It's a lot. There's a lot. Okay, maybe it's not all...
No, we still don't know the answer is why... Does the fill-in sentences are linked to the Exodus?
Oh no, we're coming back now. I just wanted to give Lawrence realize his question's awesome. As we see that there's a lot. You see the number here. This is on this one verse. There's 51 commentaries that they brought down, which probably is more. There are 25 different Talmudic, 17 Midrashic. There's a lot going on in this verse. Okay, so that would be when we get closer to Pesach. To Passover, we can spend time on just that, this line right here. Okay, I hope that helps you out for a little bit. We still have to address it. But let's talk about this piece. Okay, so what I showed you, this idea that the first paragraph starts out with, hey, there's this idea of the Bechor, there's this idea of the firstborn. And then just like kind of like leaves it and goes off on a tangent is actually true and not true. When I say it's true, it's because it's true. It just left us. It totally like went off on a different direction. Here we were. We're going to talk about the idea of Bechor, of the firstborn, and all that's about. And then does it make another mention of it in this paragraph? And by the way, the next paragraph is a completely separate entity. If you look in the Torah, there is a separation. It's like a new thing. So even though they're juxtaposed to each other, that they're really separate things. So what it's doing here is to answer your question here, is that it exactly is going to show us there is a connection between the idea of the Bechor, the idea of coming out of Egypt, matzah and chametz and the holiday of Passover and the tefillin. Okay? It's all connected. So now, when we talk about this idea of Bechor, and then right go into the story of Egypt, and one thing that's interesting here is that if you think about it, basically, we spend a lot of time talking about the Exodus from Egypt. As a matter of fact, we have a mitzvah to remember it every single day. Every single day. It's not just that, we have an annual holiday called Passover, where we spend and focus on that. But every single day, we have a mitzvah to remember the coming out of Egypt. And then on top of that, if you start like digging in, you start to notice like, wow, there are a lot of commandments that basically revolve around the fact that God took us out of Egypt. Okay? So here in this more, you know.
Yeah, it's like enough already.
All right. Exactly. It's like, right, enough, right? But so
then. Hey, you did it. All right.
Okay. Already. So then what it really is doing is that it's there are themes that are here that are so crucial that require daily remembering. Because it's not just, okay, if it was just God taking us out of Egypt and that was it, okay, we'll make an annual holiday, we'll eat some matzah, we'll have some, you know, whatever, however, you know, whatever your associations, brisket, whatever your associations on your Seder night, your charoset and your maror. No. There's something here that says I need to talk about this on a daily basis because there are concepts within this what happened here that's so fundamental that actually I need to apply it to my daily life. Okay, so one of the things that we on the most like basic level like we put on tefillin every day because it applies to our daily life, but in the Egyptian Exodus, right? So what we went through there, right? There are things that we are supposed to like, or maybe let's say this, there's something that we will constantly struggle with, right? That we struggle with certain issues that we need to every day come back to this issue. Okay, so there now to take this, there's a lot of ideas, there are a lot of layers here, and so I'm going to give you like basic ideas, like kind of high level. But the truth is that this is something that a subject matter we could like kind of work through on multiple classes on ideas of things that we come to struggle with, that we'd have to deal with on a daily basis that Egypt represents that we need to overcome. Okay. But on this, when we talk about, when we're looking right now at this, the juxtaposition of, and this is a fun thing to do. Whenever you want to analyze text in the Torah, you take a sentence and you say, okay, this is the concept that's being conveyed here. The next sentence is talking about this. And then the next one's about this. And then you start to say, well, what is A, B, C, D? What are they all, how do they connect? Like, what's the theme? What are the themes that are being pushed through here? Okay. So theme one, Bechor, firstborn. Then it right then jumps to remember the day that God took us out of Egypt, and then don't eat chametz, which is like, okay, today you're coming out of Egypt in the spring, okay, in the month of the spring. And he's telling this to the Jewish people as they're leaving. Now, when you come to the land of Israel, which God promised you, blah, 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 and you're going to do this service in this month, you're going to keep a holiday called Passover. 7 days of matzah, and you'll have on the seventh day a holiday to God. And by the way, there's another place that tells us the first day, fine. And then you'll eat matzah for 7 days. You're not going to see chametz or any type of leavened bread in all of your, wherever you live. You're going to have a seder. How do we know that? Because it says, V'higadta l'bincha, the Haggadah, which we tell over at the night of the Seder, is based on this verse. V'higadta l'bincha b'yom ahu le'mor. Meaning on the holiday, you're going to tell it over, and you're going to tell them, because of this, God did this for me as he took us out of Egypt.
Which verse is that?
Number 8. And you shall tell your son on that day. Now, and you shall tell your son in the Hebrew is V'higadta l'bincha. The name Haggadah, it's coming from this right here. V'higadta l'bincha. Okay, you see that? And that word is only one other place in all of the five books of Moses. Okay? And that has to do with another whole idea of when we bring the first fruit, Notice a theme. First fruits.
What does it mean again?
The first
fruit. So how do you get
that? The Vigata is to tell over. You shall tell.
To tell over. Okay.
But Vigata.
No, wait a minute. No, you haven't gotten to the point.
I'm okay. And then it ties us into, and then therefore you should have a tefillin on your arm and on your eyes. Okay.
Now, why are those linked?
Okay. So now, the theme that's running through here is it's saying that the concept of Bechor, of the firstborn male and the firstborn animal, has to be devoted to God, is because the idea of coming out of Egypt is so integrally connected to that theme. The idea of the firstborn. Okay? Now, why is that so? Why is that so? Okay? So now, on a basic level, when Moses is told by God, when he's about to go down to Egypt after being in exile for many, many years, I think it's about 40 years, he's already in his 80s, he's heading back to Egypt to go and tell Pharaoh it's time to let the Jews out. And what happens? God says to Moses, he says, he refers to us as B'ni B'chori Yisrael. The Jewish people are my firstborn child. Okay? Now,
okay. The Jewish people are my firstborn.
Okay. Okay. So now, conceptually, like what is, so we need to like, these are, you know, what does it mean when God says they are my firstborn child? So what ends up happening here, actually, if you go back to chapter 12, I want to show you this, okay? This is, we're going to pause this for a second. I'm going to go to chapter, relax. Chapter 12, I wanted to show you this. We're not going anywhere, but I want to show you the first mitzvah that God gives the Jewish people. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt saying, first mitzvah, this month shall be to you the head of the months. Rosh Chodeshim, Rishon Hu, to you it shall be the first of the months of the year. First mitzvah is that he says, I want you to keep this month of Nisan to be, you're going to start keeping time by the lunar cycle, and this is going to be your first month, but I'm tying it to the lunar cycle, Rishon, a first for you. Now, the nature of the lunar, or how we experience the moon, is that it's something that it disappears, literally, and then there's a rebirth, so to speak. Meaning, again, I underline that it's how we experience it. The moon's there, it doesn't change. But how we experience it is it literally goes and disappears for a day, and then it slowly, slowly starts to reappear. Every night, a little piece, and then it gets to the 15th of the month, which is the whole moon, and then it starts to wane again. Okay? So now, what God is saying, first and foremost, as you exit, so the first mitzvah he gives us is the idea of time, of sanctification of time. Okay? But of the idea of time. Now, I just want to jump back. We're jumping around here a little bit, but I have to show you this because we go back to creation. It says here, Bereshit bara Elokim, in the beginning of God's creation of the heavens and earth. Now, this word in the Hebrew, Bereshit, has different ways you can read it. It can be for the beginning, God created, in the beginning. So here it translates it in the beginning. But also, it's translated or understood as for the beginning, God created. Now, what does that mean, for the beginning? So let's look at Rashi here. Rashi says that for the beginning is, the verse calls for a midrashic interpretation because according to the simple interpretation, the vowelization of the word bara should be different. Okay, whatever, fine. So what is it saying? It teaches us that the sequence of the creation as written is impossible, as written immediately below, but rather it's for the sake of the Torah, which is called the beginning of his way, and for the sake of Israel, who are called the first of his grain. Okay, so that there's this idea that God created the world for things that are firsts, that the idea of things that are the beginning points, the things that are the first, that Hashem for Reshit, for the idea of for things that are first, is what God created it for. Okay? So now, there's this idea of that God created the world with 10 utterances, with 10, he spoke, and he said, let there be light, let there be this. He said, there are recordings of 10 ma'amarot. The problem is when you actually count, you only can find 9. There are 9 recordings where it says, God said, let there be, okay? So, but the tradition is that there are 10. So the answer is that the first utterance was actually this line, that in the beginning, God created the Shemayim and the Eretz. He created the heavens and the earth. And he did it with his speech. So, but where is it? It's not recorded because there was nothing in the world for it to like connect to.
So you found a loophole.
What?
You found a loophole.
A loophole. But the idea is that
wait,
God...
No. You have to get back to why...
I am. Okay, we have 10 minutes. We're going to get there. Okay. So now, the idea of the creation is the idea that the first thing God created was time. And he created a beginning point. And so now, everything that has to do with the idea of beginnings, and if what we just said is, we explained that the Jewish people are one of those firsts, okay? And so now, when we come to the idea of the Egyptian Exodus, okay? So what God is doing in this and the messaging that's occurring here in here, and also it comes out more in the second paragraph, which is kind of odd, where he talks more about the idea of, we see from verse 11 on, where it comes back and it really kind of opens it up, the idea of like it's spending a little more time on the idea of the Bechor mitzvah. But what it's about is an emergence from something that's the opposite, like a counter energy force to that which is really what it's all about. What is it all about? It's the idea of firsts, of the idea of a creation point, of a starting point where there was nothing before it, and it's going towards a goal. And so creation, the creation story, if I were to say, what's one of the takeaways from the idea of the recording that the Torah goes out of its way to tell us about the creation story, is that we're supposed to know that there was a point when there was nothing and that God created the physical reality that we know and time. And so that when we start our story as a Jewish people, the first mitzvah that's given in chapter 12 is about time. That there's going to be an experience. We're going to experience time based on the lunar, how we experience the moon and how it goes away and comes back. That there's a point in time where there's nothing and then it reemerges. And then it comes out. It's a birth. We call it the molad. It literally is born. That the way we experience and how we're supposed to experience time is the way that it happened in creation. That God, in his first utterance, which we don't hear, but if we see it recorded, is that he created a beginning. Okay? And that there's a first. And so now, fast forward to the Jewish people's emergence as a people, we're going to come out of a place called Egypt. Now, what's Egypt? Symbolically, you have the Nile River. What is the Nile River? It's the constant. You always have what you need. You don't need any rain. It's always there. It's the good old reliable Nile. It's the place of the plush. It was the center of humanity at the time. It was everything. It was the Gan HaYarok. It's called the green. Like it's known as like the perfect place, so to speak, because you didn't have to worry about what was going to be. It always was. Okay. In contrast, what our experience what we're going to come emerge from that place is we have to go to a place of Israel, which relies on, we got to pray for rain because it's not a given. And it's a constant thing where we have to work on to have it come to us. And so, whereas the Nile is constant, it doesn't have a beginning and an end. What we understand, and the idea of a Bechor, the way we celebrate it to God, is that it has that place of renewal, of a starting place, of a beginning point. And so we have to take our first and dedicate it to God. And what God afflicts is the first of theirs, because their first is saying there's no such thing as, there's nothing special about first. Things are always the same way. There never was a beginning point, and we're not going anywhere. It's just that things are. And the way we understand time in Hebrew is zman, is hasmana. It means we're going towards. We're working towards something. So now, as we come out of Egypt, God says to Moses, and he tells us there's going to be this idea of sanctifying the firstborn. But then, before we get into that, why are we talking about it? Because I want you to remember that you came out of Egypt, and therefore you can't eat chametz. Okay, that's a side point. We can talk about exactly the significance of why chametz is something that is, that you, bread, if you give it time, become the time is the factor that makes it into something that's not just flour and water. So there's a time factor that's associated with chametz. But what we're saying now is we're focused on the beginning point. So I'm going to be on the most base level of things. The starting point is matzah. Matzah is flour and water. Time makes leaven. And what we're saying is we're focused here on the thing that's the starting point of the base level, because I want to focus on that first. Because once I have that, then I can talk about where I'm going, okay? So I start here. And that's why I talk about this as opposed to that. It's about matzah and not the thing that has, where time progresses. And then I'm going to tell my kids about that. And what? I put on myself tefillin, on my hands, on my arm, because it reminds me of this issue. And that's what I come back to. And so it's a continuous like theme that's being run through here. It's about the first. And so we did a piece a while back that talks about this idea that when we put on tefillin daily, we're supposed to connect to this idea of like this energy force of when we come out of Egypt, what we were experiencing was going back to that place of renewal, of incredible like freshness of time that we experience, that we can experience if we let ourselves tap into it. Okay, so now when we look at these, when we put on our tefillin, so we have the Shema, we have the Hayim Shema, we have about that idea of the unity of God and all that stuff. What's crazy is that we don't spend enough time talking about these other two chapters, right? These two other paragraphs, right? Because in them, it brings us back to this important idea of this incredible idea of what it means to be the first, like the beginning of what time is, of what it purpose is in terms of where we're going, and then how it all connects from this emergence of coming out from that place of where things are just always the same, and like going to a place where like the idea of Israel, like we have the startup nation, like what is that? It's this idea of emerging freshness of things that are constantly and vital, like there's vitality. It's always like renewing, and there's almost like incredible energy that is what we're emerging from. This idea that things are not always a given, but from that uncertainty and from that, let's call it chaos, is the idea of creativity and growth. And so therefore,
doing this at the beginning of the day is sort of a reminder that you have an opportunity to use your time correctly, use your time well, I guess.
Yes, and every day is a new day, right? The idea that we constantly are going back to remembering it is not because, like, oh, again? No. The point is that every day, like, there is, everything in our lives, in the physical reality, speaks to a Nile River, especially today, where everything's just like, you know, and except for, like, you know, when we got the shock of a corona or, you know, different, like, let's say, you know, you have, like, these natural, you know, crazy, like, you know, you have a crazy snowstorm or a hurricane or whatever it is where things get knocked down. But otherwise, we live in a reality where everything's kind of like there and given. It's like, I'm going to go out tomorrow and I get in the car and I'm going to go. It's like everything's, like, you know, the bread's in the store and the eggs and the milk. So everything's always there. And the answer is that's not what it's, that Hashem, when this whole process of the emergence from Egypt was to remind us of this idea of how the moon reacts, how we experience the moon, that cycle, that there was a beginning, that it started from somewhere and it's going somewhere, and that every single day has that power. If you want to tap into it, you put on your tefillin and you connect to the story. It's exactly this point. And so then we go back, we understand exactly what this, now we understand what's happening. Yeah, it's about the firstborn.
You're tapping into the idea that there's a beginning and a journey.
And a journey, and that it's every day is a fresh start. That every day, I remember coming out of Egypt because every single day it brings me back to that place of the most base level. Lo yechal chametz. Don't eat that which is about time. I need time to make chametz. I need time to make leaven. Flour and water on the base level of matzah is that beginning point. When things are in its starting point, I can always go back to that starting point. And that's why we celebrate Passover in spring, because that's the world is coming back to life. It's re-emerging. We come back. It has to be during that time. It doesn't, can't be in the summer or can't be in the winter. It has to specifically be. Its essence is this idea of spring, of that idea of coming back to life, of reemergence. You hear? Huh. And so every single day, this is all tied together. I put on my tefillin and I tie myself up to remembering about coming out from this place of emerging. And every day I need to emerge from that place that lacks that newness. It's like that life is something that is constantly going to emerge and be fresh and new. And that I might have had a bad day yesterday. Okay, I'm waking up today. I put on my tefillin and I connect to the unity of God and all that stuff. But I'm also tapping in to this incredible, these two paragraphs that tell us about this incredible connection of connecting to that idea of Bechor, the idea of the firsts, of that you know, connecting back to the idea of the beginning of time, and that there's always a new beginning that we can experience as we see with the month. Yeah. Okay?
I see. Got it. Okay, got it. All right. You tied it in.
I know. Of course I did. But thank you for, thank you for being the prod, you know?
I was a little suspicious that I wasn't going to get around to it.
We got there. All right? I got it.
Very nice.
All right.
Jonathan, one question.
Yes.
Going back to what you said very beginning. So for the head, it's four separate parchments, but for the arm, it's a single. Is there a specific order
that
they go in for the head?
Oh, how the paragraphs?
Like, is it like one is closer to, you know, the body versus the other ones? Is there a specific order for that?
Okay, so first and foremost, we'll go through two things. One is we put the one on our arm first, okay? Tie that and wrap it on our arm, and then we put the one on our head, okay? That's the order. In terms of the way the paragraphs are inside them, okay, are you guys got your seatbelt on? There are different opinions. There's Rashi, and then there's Rabbi Natan.
Surprise, surprise.
Of course.
About
what the order, how do they sit? How are the paragraphs written on the parchment in the yad, on the arm? And also how they are ordered in the four compartments on the head. Do we record them as they were written in the Torah?
Yes.
Or do we record them in a different way? Okay.
I go with the Torah.
Okay, so that's the machlok. That's the different opinions. One is Rashi, one is Tosos. The more prevalent thing, everybody wears Rashi tefillin. Okay, but then there are many people that wear two sets where they put on a Rashi, and then afterwards, later on, they'll take that off and they'll put on the Rabbeinu Tam.
Oh, you can both.
And it's based on it really boils down to just the order of how they sit in terms of. That already, I have to go back and just remind myself about Rashi, which way is Rashi, which one's Tosos, Rabbeinu Tam. But again, is it the order of how they're recorded in the Torah? Like we just saw chapter 13, first one is the 1 through 10, and then 11 through, those first two are recorded together. And then Shema comes. Then Shema comes in, Vahayim Shema, right? Or the idea of how, which ones like would you put next to each other? I have to look it up again to remind myself exactly which one's which, Rabbeinu Tam or Rashi. But either way, but that's a great question mark. Okay. Yeah, there is an idea. There are people, like for example, in the old city of Jerusalem, they wear their tefillin all day long. And the truth is,
you can't function like that in the world.
You can. They do. But again, it's an idea of having it with you all the time. But on that, I have to leave. I have to run to an appointment. But we'll leave it there. But Lawrence, we'll come back. Belina Nader, remind me. We should talk about that verse that has that repetition of leaven. But at least on the most base level, you understand now the issue of chametz. In the context of what we were just discussing, you can understand why the leavened bread is a problem. Because time is an issue. That the idea of anything from its base, we want to focus on the idea of the first, the beginning point. So the whole theme that runs through that first paragraph of chapter 13 is the idea of connecting to, it's Bechor, it's the firstborn coming out of Egypt, but all about when you come out of Egypt, our emergence from there, it was focused on the beginning. It's a beginning, and we always have access to the beginning. To that, like whatever we fall, we can always get up, return back, because we are coming from a place of when you have a creation point, when you have a starting point, that means that we're involved in something that's constantly evolving, that has a starting point and it's going somewhere. It's not this static type of reality, which you have the Nile, it's always the same, but rather we have this incredibly vital, like the vitality of what our religion is trying us to get towards. Okay? Have a great week.